Get ready. Get comfy for the next Nonprofit Insider Podcast episode.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Nonprofit Insider Podcast. Listen, we got a mega guest today. But before I introduce this guest, before I kind of bring them on, you're going to get some real good love here on this episode. Trust, you're going to love this one. Be sure to subscribe to the Nonprofit Insider Podcast. Listen, you can find us on Apple Podcasts. We're on Spotify as well. People keep saying, you got to get on YouTube. I know. This is 20 years. There's so many things to do, but maybe in 2025, you'll see me doing some more stuff on YouTube. I swear, I say that every single week. And if you haven't already, be sure to leave a review. A lot of people may not realize this, but it's one of the best ways. I love seeing reviews and seeing what people have to say about the Nonprofit Insider Podcast. So be sure to go on Apple Podcasts, go to Spotify, drop 5 stars, or just go ahead and write some really positive stuff. Use ChatGPT. We got a ChatGPT episode. So go ahead and use ChatGPT and just say some nice things about me. Okay. I am joined today with someone, you know, you meet people, you cross paths with folks, and you just, you instantly know when you're in the presence of a star, a rising comet that's just flying through the universe. Joining me today is Mackenzie Riley, a dedicated community leader from Phoenix, Arizona. As a rising nonprofit professional and DEI advocate, Mackenzie has built a significant career in nonprofit management, workforce development, and community engagement. Her journey began collaborating with organizations like Border Angels and Habitat for Humanity, focusing on supporting diverse and impoverished communities. She has developed impactful programs and resources addressing food insecurity, mental health, and addiction recovery. Mackenzie's unwavering commitment to service drives her mission to create lasting change and uplift those around her. Her current work spans education and workforce development, where she creates meaningful partnerships with employers and aligns them with students and educators to address critical workforce issues in Arizona. Wow. Welcome in, Mackenzie. That's really impressive, actually. That's some really high-level stuff.
Wow. Thank you so much for having me, Swim. I'm like getting emotional hearing that background and that breakdown. But thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here, you know, as your final guest of 2024.
You know, it's super funny. I was telling you, I was like, you're either going to be the first guest of 2025 or the last guest of 2024. And so here we are, final guest of 2024. This is a big milestone for us. Episode 55. Glad you're here.
Thank you so much. That makes me feel even more special. You know, fun fact, this is actually my first podcast that I've ever been on.
Really? Well, this, it's super funny because I think about that, and in like 10 years, someone's going to ask you, what's the first one you're going to be on? You're going to totally forget about us because, like I said, you are a rising star. People are going to know your name. And so being able to be connected with you as a person that's really enjoyed living in the Southwest. And now I'm back out on the East Coast. I want to make sure I share lots of love to all the folks that are doing work out there. And look, I want to start with this, Mackenzie. You always seem to be doing something in the community. You know, so what have you been up to lately? Because every time I look up, you're on stages, you're attending rallies, you're walking around at conferences, or you're just out there having a good time. You know, what's been happening in your world lately? What are you up to?
Yeah, I love that. Well, I mean, as you can imagine, that takes a ton of energy. So currently I've been, you know, taking a lot of intentional time to really recharge and reflect on this year. I've had such an amazing 2024 and just professionally and personally, I've been so proud of everything I've achieved. So to wrap up the year, being a guest on this podcast makes me feel really excited. But yeah, I mean, I've been spending a ton of great time with my family, obviously. As we end a year and, you know, start a new year and not know what the next year looks like, just with different energy, new presidents. I'm really being intentional about the time I'm spending with my loved ones, but also, you know, setting goals, getting organized and kind of creating a vision of what that next year looks like, including making a vision board.
Ooh, it's super funny. I have a vision board right over here. You can't see it. It's on my wall, right on top of my chimney. And one of the things I put, this was like back, it's a 5-year one. I did it in 2022. And one of the things I put on it was moving, relocating, and then doing a podcast within that time frame. And so this is something that, yeah, a vision board is a good one. And I think we're going to talk a little bit more. I want to hear some more about intentionality, because that's a lot harder than people realize. We might talk about that after the break. But I want you to take me on your journey, Mackenzie, leading up to today.
Yeah.
How did you even enter into the nonprofit space? Was it by accident? Was it by design? Was it like a combination of two? How did you get into this world?
Yeah, no, I love the question. It's funny. I mean, I truly feel like my journey has been a blend of both accidental and intentional. I'm actually the first generation college student in my family. So when I entered college, I kind of had an unknown understanding of what to expect. You know, I did know that going into college, I was focused on being a resource to others, being a resource to my classmates, to the community. I'm a proud Wildcat. So being able to serve the Tucson community was something I was really excited for. So I ended up learning about sociology, you know, study of society, and really understanding how different dynamics and cultures and subgroups operated. So I quickly discovered, you know, mission trips in college. My first mission trip was in Aurora, Colorado, which was focused on mental health and gun violence. We partnered with a senior living facility and Columbine High School. So, you know, that was the first time I was in a different state doing really hands-on work in the community. And that experience was just so amazing. I came back after that trip and I was like, I need to lead a mission trip my junior year. So quickly got into it, led a mission trip my junior year on human trafficking, immigration, and Chicano culture in San Diego, where we partnered with Border Angels. And, you know, that really fueled my passion for community advocacy. And, you know, fun fact, my first community partnership, which is somewhat what I'm doing now. And then after college, you know, I ended up working at a food bank where I was coordinating, you know, massive food distributions across the valley, you know, creating programs, addressing food insecurity, building the partnerships again, which is really amazing. That was my first big girl job. Kind of pivoted a bit, went to sales, which I think sales is great. Everyone needs to have sales experience. You know, I had a really strong background and understanding of business and communication skills that was really new to me at that time, kind of needed a big kick. And I was doing that during COVID. So I learned, So that's a hard time to sell. So I'm getting that kind of empathy on that high level was great. But now I'm back in the nonprofit sector where I'm feeling, you know, at home. Grateful to be, you know, in this position and combine all those great experiences as I continue to lead and move up in my career.
Hey, okay, you said Wildcats. For those that don't know, what's the Wildcats referring to? Hold on, I'm going back here in a little bit, but what's the Wildcats referring to?
Yeah, Bear Down. Wildcats are our that's our mascot at the University of Arizona in Tucson, Arizona.
Okay. Based in Tucson, yes. Arizona. All right. For a lot of people may not always know, like, Wildcats, I want to make sure people know, because, you know, there's some great people that come out of University of Arizona. You guys are repping out there. You kind of given us a good rundown of really how you ended up into the space. And you really have some really, I mean, shoot, we only have like an hour. I mean, you really highlight and talk about some things. Even I didn't know. You and I have been connecting for some time now. But the part about like the working in Columbine, even your work with Habitat for Humanity, those are aspects of your life I really didn't know. But I do know a little bit more about your work in the DEI space. Mm. And look, DEI, it's been in the news a lot these last few years, right? You know, but it still feels like a large percentage of Americans, and I'm talking Americans, you know, not international, but specifically in the U.S., kind of a U.S. centered. It feels like a lot of people, a large percentage of Americans are either unfamiliar with what DEI is, how it's defined, how it's placed into practice. From your point of view and the work you've done in the community, can you break down or can you give us a breakdown of what DEI entails in today's world?
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, DEI, as most of us know, you know, stands for diversity, equity, and inclusion. which aims to, you know, create a space and programs for everyone, you know, and for everyone to feel welcomed, valued, and included, regardless of identity. So whether that's race, gender, ability, age, you know, there's a whole spectrum of ways you can be included in that group. But what I think is, you know, important about DEI is it ensures that diverse voices are being heard and represented and respected across all levels of organization. So it doesn't matter if you're at the tippy top or at the very bottom, your voice and your identity and your culture matters. You know, it's sad that our current scope of life, you know, DEI is often misunderstood or challenged, but recently it seems like a lot of companies have been trying to defund DEI and taking away those initiatives, which is wrong. You know, I've spent some time in a DEI role the past year. I was actually a DEI co-chair and I loved my time, you know, being a woman of color and being someone that majored in sociology, you know, this role was really meaningful. So at my time, I took a group of individuals to participate in a pride walk. I would share, you know, weekly DEI content, education, events, and really newsletters, just highlighting different aspects of culture and maybe days or anniversaries that people aren't aware of.
Yeah, and I think there's a level of... I want to dive just a little bit longer on the DEI piece. It feels like there's people that don't think that they can be a part of DEI or that it's actually exclusive, like DEI only really designed to represent certain individuals. I remember hearing from someone, this was many years back, maybe like 2 years back, a colleague of mine saying, DEI includes everybody. Yeah. And I think if you even just have that as a framework to start, a lot of people think DEI only includes certain groups, ironically enough. That's it. That's everybody in terms of the way your voice is heard, in terms of the way your identity is preserved and protected. I mean, is that right or is that not right?
Yeah, no, I've heard similar language shared as well. I think oftentimes it can be really intimidating to come into DEI spaces or go to DEI events because you may not fit, you may not feel you fit whatever that specific event is. But in reality, if you take a look at who you are as an individual, there's a lot that can go into your DEI background and who you are and how you're represented. So that can be identity, that can be gender, that can be, you know, class group. It really isn't just one size fits all. But I do understand that sometimes DEI events or language or groups can feel somewhat intimidating.
Yeah, I've had a couple of episodes out there on this podcast about DEI. Go back and listen to some of those thoughts. It was actually almost about a year ago on January 19th, I released an episode after the Harvard President Claudine Gay, she was ousted from her role as the president of Harvard and different aspects of DEI that kind of came into to play with that. So, Mackenzie, you're really giving us some good insights here. It shows the different aspects that you present and give to the nonprofit space because you have, I mean, so many insights and so many different aspects of this world. I mean, it's pretty impressive.
Oh, thank you, Swim. Thank you.
And listen, we've got more. Do not go anywhere because I've got more questions. I have more questions for Mackenzie. She's given us some really good insights. So we're going to take a quick pause, just a quick break, a word from our sponsors. It's probably just going to be me telling you to leave some more reviews. So let's take a quick break and we'll see you here in a sec. Hey, we're going to get back to the episode in under 1 minute because Mackenzie is really giving us some good insights. Trust me, you're going to want to stick around for this one. She has some amazing things to say on the second half of this podcast. I just want to take the time to say thank you so much for listening to the Nonprofit Insider Podcast. You all have been so amazing. Mackenzie is our final guest of 2024. And what's super funny is
I'm kind of thrilled to announce this, but we have been having a lot of great guests come on the podcast of late, and we are so excited here. I'm so excited as the host of the Nonprofit Insider Podcast to announce that starting with Mackenzie, from here on out, we will be able to pay our guests for being on the podcast. We love all of our guests, and we have so many more we want to have on, and being able to pay our guests and compensate them for their time, this is going to be so amazing. So thank you once again for listening to the Nonprofit Insider Podcast. We appreciate everything that you do. All right, let's get back to the episode. Mackenzie.
All right, everyone, welcome back. We are joined one more time with Mackenzie Riley, community leader, advocate, just overall do-gooder. And listen, a person you are going to want to know in the industry, especially if you're out there in Arizona. Hey, you answered those questions pretty well, Mackenzie. I'm feeling pretty decent here.
I'm feeling fired up. I'm ready to see what's next.
Well, and, you know, that's the thing, because one of the reasons why I wanted you to be on this show is because you're quite connected in the community, but you also, I would imagine, are quite ambitious. Just talking to you, not off air, as they like to say, it's clear like you have, even if you don't know where you're going, I like to say that, not the proverbial you, even if you don't know where you're going, there are certain people that have a strong sense of themselves and desires and passions that they have. You know, when you are working with foundations and schools and young people, what is it that keeps you going? Where does your motivation come from?
Honestly, breaking generational curses is my primary motivation. I've done such a significant amount of healing work myself, both personally and professionally, that I understand how transformational that level of support can be from someone else, how that can feel when you're struggling. So working with these young people, I can really empathize with their potential for growth, whether that's mentally, educationally, professionally, and spiritually. So what I really love about, you know, the current work I'm doing and talking with young people is hearing their success stories. Like, I feel deeply moved when I hear about how an opportunity or resource provided can allow a student to feed their family or can become the breadwinner in their own home. Like, knowing that we've helped break a cycle of hardship really inspires me to keep working and creating.
You know, Go ahead.
I was just going to also add, like, I mean, the motivation also comes from working with organizations that share similar values that also kind of align with my passion. So, you know, it really takes a village, and being a Phoenix and Arizona native, it makes it even easier for me to continue to find that passion motivation.
I'm really glad you went even deeper in that. In that answer, because when you said breaking generational trauma, my first thought was generational trauma for yourself. Like, I'm thinking it was an internal motivation, but then as you answered it some more, it sounded more like generational trauma of your circle, those around you, society, community, whatever the case may be. Is that generational trauma? Is that for yourself? Is it for others you're trying to break? I want to hammer that in a little more.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the beautiful thing about doing, you know, your work on your own generational curses or trauma is being able to then help people identify where they need that help as well. So since I've done such a large amount of work myself, I'm motivated to want to help people be the best versions of themselves, whether that's in the community, in the schools, in different organizations, even my friend groups. Like, I should be a therapist. I should be getting paid for these conversations I'm having, but it just comes so natural to me. And to be able to provide educational resources or just personal support does really change, I think, the energy and the frequency of our community.
I'll be honest. I never tried to keep have an idea of how a person's going to answer when I'm interviewing them. But that's an answer I did not expect, to be completely honest. And that really aligns so much with who you are and the things you're doing out there in the community. When you're out there going to get it.
Yeah.
And not just when I, you know, connecting with you on a text or connecting with you on LinkedIn. Like, I'm going to be picturing your answers in my mind because you got a follower for life right here.
You're gonna be doing a
bunch of different things out there. You may be in the nonprofit space, you may not. We might talk about that here in a little bit, but nonprofit burnout is real. And I know with a new presidential administration coming in at the start of the next year, just starting in a new year, right? 2025, it's cold outside. We got the seasonal depression. You know, people are kind of like, it's like misery for a lot of folks. Now, I'm hearing so many people in the nonprofit space, you know, wanting to keep moving forward, but there's a sense of dread among some people. To what degree do you experience nonprofit burnout, if at all?
Yeah, I really feel like burnout in the nonprofit space is super unique because the work we're doing is mission driven. You know, what we're doing tackles such complex challenges with many times very limited resources, you know, limited funding, limited manpower, limited resources. I mean, it's and time. Put that on, put that first. So, and that's something that I've just learned kind of in my field and in my work, you know, but also the realization that you cannot help everyone as much as you'd like to, you know, and that honestly can lead to not only mental burnout, but physical burnout and exhaustion. So I remember early on in my career hearing the quote, "If you don't make time to rest, your body will do it for you." And I'm so grateful for this quote because that painted such a beautiful picture of prioritizing rest and self-care. And at a young age, you know, being new to the industry post-grad, it's normal to just want to go, 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 go. So for me, I really manage burnout by emphasizing, you know, my self-care routines, mindfulness, but also staying active. So I love to do self-care, whether that's, you know, doing my hair or painting my nails, getting my nails done, whatever. But it's more than that. It's talking to yourself, right? I'm a huge proponent in positive affirmations, all of that work. But I've really found a community that I am connected with. So.
Even earlier, you know, when I had asked you a little bit more about, you know, what led you up today and taking me on your journey, you had said intentionality.
Yes.
You mentioned that was something moving forward, or not even moving forward, but something you're doing now and moving forward. I mean, it's clear you have different aspects of being like, kind of like whole body, whole minded. Like it's all kind of connected, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, no. And with the intentionality, I mean, it's easy to say self-care, but if you're not doing it and if you don't understand the importance of pouring and investing into yourself, it's just pointless. But I feel like one way I'm really intentional is with finding mentors and mentorship. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge proponent and lover of mentorship. So, you know, not only am I a mentor myself, but I'm a mentee. So I've really loved finding mentors in the nonprofit space that understand the different nonprofit, you know, issues or barriers, challenges that I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. You know, it makes me feel validated and reaffirmed connecting with those types of individuals.
Yes. Those things are important. Just to get some insights. It's nice. It's almost like it's having an advocate when you have a mentor, someone that can kind of guide you a little bit, show you the ways of the force, but they're not responsible for signing your paycheck and you're not, you know, they're not a family member. Although we have mentors in different spaces, but a lot of my best mentors have been like, you know, they're their own separate thing.
Yeah. No, I just got one of, you know, I think my best mentors, I just connected with her like this past year and she's changed my life in a way that like, I don't think I was prepared for, but I'm glad that I met her when I did, because, you know, I see a version of myself in her just 10 years, you know, in 10 years. So it's cool also when you're connecting with someone in the nonprofit space, because you don't know, I mean, you could be. It's cool connecting with a mentor in the nonprofit space because you're never sure what you're going to learn about yourself, you know, in that sector. So, I love, go ahead.
Do you want to give that? You might not want to give that person a shout out. You might try to keep them anonymous, but we need to give that person a shout out.
I would love to. And when I told her that I was doing this podcast, she was so excited. So Alex Bradbury, thank you for being the woman you are, the business owner you are. She owns an incredible business called The Sparkle Bar in Scottsdale, Arizona, to help women find their beauty and shine. And she's just taught me so much about being a strong, confident woman. And I look up to her in every aspect. So thank you for being an amazing mentor and teaching me how to mentor as well.
What was her name again? One more time.
Alex Bradbury.
Alex. Okay. Shout out to you, Alex. I'm going to have to come. Next time I'm in Scottsdale, I have the father-in-law lives in Chandler. I know that's totally separate from Scottsdale, but if I'm ever in Scottsdale, Sparkle Bar, I'm going to have to pay a visit.
They know what they're doing out there. They're great. Yeah.
Well, did you have a mentor when you were in college or university, or was it like after you left university?
Ooh. So funny enough, I did not have a mentor, but I was a mentor for Big Brothers Big Sisters for 2 years. So I think I was doing, I was a mentor at Big Brothers Big Sisters for my junior and senior year. And it was funny, I would meet with her weekly and I would literally walk like 20 minutes down the Tucson street, which if you know anything about Tucson, you know it's sketchy and there's potholes everywhere.
whoa, don't have Tucson coming at Tucson.
Sorry, going at me. Okay, bear down. I love my Tucsonians. But dodging potholes made the mentorship even stronger. And since I was away from my siblings, they were back in Phoenix, I felt a different level of connection and relationship with her that I was really missing from my family. So that was the last time I was mentoring. I'm currently a mentor. I didn't have an actual mentor in college.
The reason I asked, because you're not that many years removed from being in that college university space. If you were to give yourself a piece of advice on your graduation day, it's graduation day, shout out to the Wildcats.
Hey,
what would you tell younger Mackenzie?
Yeah, I know. I love this because I'm always talking to my younger self. So honestly, I would tell my younger self that she is enough. You know, this is an affirmation that I've actually found myself saying on a day-to-day basis, morning to night. It's something that I've written down, something that I've prayed on, and I've really like nurtured since youth. And as I am about to turn 30, so as I approach a new decade of life, I've really like come to see how every win or how every setback has shaped me and made me an even stronger and confident woman. And I'm grateful for it. Like when I turned 29 this past year, I was excited looking back at everything I had achieved since college. So, little Mackenzie, baby Mac, I call her, you are enough. And I think honestly, knowing this earlier would have probably saved me and my newly graduated self, from a lot of imposter syndrome, personally and professionally.
Oh,
yeah.
Hold on. This wasn't on the rundown. Can we talk about imposter syndrome? Mm. I mean, how do you define imposter syndrome?
So when I think about imposter syndrome, I really think about feeling like you aren't grounded in your current maybe environment or in your current personal experience.
Yes.
With me, I've noticed with imposter syndrome, I spend a lot of time almost disassociating from the spaces I'm in. I do the you're not enough kind of mindset that really tricks my brain, but I have to ground myself in, this is what you've overcome. This is what you've achieved. And this is how you're continuing to be great. And I think with imposter syndrome, it's important to just continue to look forward. And whenever you look past and when you look back, that's when things become dangerous.
Ooh, wait a minute. Hold on. You're dropping some gems today.
Let's extend this podcast another bonus 45 minutes.
Listen, can you be the first guest in 2025? Oh,
let's Yeah, let's sign a contract. I will always be the last guest of the year and the first guest of the year.
Right? Oh, we need a part two. Because, yes, it's dangerous when you think too far. I've caught myself doing that. See, now you've got me opening up. Maybe you should be a therapist.
I know.
I'm living back in Philadelphia, and I always thought I would never move back here. Because I grew up here. And so being back here, you know, I'm renovating my house and all that stuff. And it's so funny because it's like a whirlwind because everything that was from your past kind of comes back. You're like, oh, that's the elementary school I, you know, went to. And I remember this, that, and the third from that corner. And it's really strange being here. So I try not to go too far back and get too crazy because you can kind of get yourself into a bit of a tailspin. It sounds like you're doing all the work. Professionally, personally, family, and the family aspect. I mean, it sounds like you're doing a little bit of everything.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I really am. And I mean, being a Phoenix native, I experienced the same thing. Like, you know, if I wanted to, I could drive up and down the same street that I grew up taking, you know, going to grade school. So it's important to just stay grounded in your wins and your accomplishments, do the vision boards and you'll be okay. But I'm really proud of the work I've done and the healing, and I'm happy to help others through those journeys as well.
You're inspiring me and a lot of people on this podcast. Once again, I'm joined with Mackenzie Riley. If you don't know Arizona, you've never been, you're going to want to go because there are people like Mackenzie all over the Southwest that are doing some really amazing things. It's funny being back here, Mackenzie, in Philadelphia. I'll talk to people that I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, I just came here from New Mexico. And it's kind of like you could just tell in their face. They're like, I know it's a state. Where on the map is it? You know?
Yes.
People know California, maybe Las Vegas. And so you're doing some high level stuff in Arizona. And the more and more I talk to you, Mackenzie, the more I feel like you can go any number of directions. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the nonprofit space, sales, politics, advocacy, it feels like you can go any number of directions. And what often happens, it feels like in the nonprofit space, we lose talented people, you know, such as yourself, burnout, frustration, you know. Imposter syndrome, sometimes just better pay. You know, do you see yourself being in the nonprofit space for long? Is there a role in the nonprofit space you would love to step into? Because we do have a wide audience here at the Nonprofit Insider Podcast. I mean, you could do almost anything.
Yeah, I love that. And shout out to all the listeners. Thank you for being here with us. You know, I do see myself staying in the field for a while. I really love working in the nonprofit sector because I feel like it, you know, aligns with my core values. Very passionate about leadership, you know, service, obviously. But I'm an extremely authentic person, and I really believe in integrity. And I find that, you know, you find that a lot of the missions in the nonprofit industry. So, I'm really drawn to leadership roles. I'm currently in a leadership position. But I'm really focused on being in kind of a framework that allows me to continue to empower individuals and teams. You know, I really love to be able to show people, hey, here's your true power. Here's how you can shine on. You know, shine on's my mantra, right? And that's what I've been telling myself my whole life. So I've been able to do that, you know, through program management, advocacy, but I also could see myself taking this work, you know, globally. I have no real restrictions on what that power looks like. And I love to use my voice and my platform to, you know, help people discover those things about themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. We're definitely going to have you back. We're definitely going to have you back.
Part two.
We need a part two. Yes. Because I just know 6 months from now, 9 months from now, 12 months from now, there's going to be some more high level stuff you're doing. And people are going to be like, what's that Mackenzie one up to? So think about here. I got to get to something here, but think about here. If people want to get in contact with you, if that's something you're interested in. But before we get into that, one of the things we like to do here in the Nonprofit Insider Podcast is we like to end each interview with a hashtag nonprofit horror story. We have not been doing a whole lot of those lately, Mackenzie. I've been slacking, right? Doing TikTok dances for views and listens and doing all kind of craziness here. But the nonprofit horror story is something, when I first started the podcast, it was one of the initial things that really launched this, because there's so many aspects of being in this space that's a lot more reality than people realize, right? I mean, it's still a lot of work in this space, and there are a lot of good stories that are out there. Some of them are funny. They're not always horrific in that sense, but I understand you might have a story to share, a nonprofit horror story. Is that right?
Yes, I do. I have quite the story for you today, Swim. I'm actually really excited to share this. kind of a flashback. You know, my very first day, first big girl job post-grad, was at a food bank. And so my very first day of work, I was really thrown into the deep end. So picture this. It's a cold winter in Phoenix, Arizona, 6, 7 a.m. in the morning.
Okay.
And, I had to wake up super early to drive about an hour and a half to a food distribution in Casa Grande. So when we arrived there, we arrived to 200 cars lined up in a parking lot. Unfortunately, our supply and truck was nowhere to be found. Completely MIA. So the team immediately, jumps on the phone, starts calling everyone and their mothers to figure out what's going on. And we found out that the truck had not been loaded, but obviously it was not sent out. And we had a line of hundreds of people in this area waiting for food. Yes. So we had to place an emergency food order, went literally car to car, apologizing to people, letting them know what's going on with the delay, but letting them know, hey, this is what time the food should come. We'll stay a little bit later. Please come back. We're going to have enough food, so don't be worried about that. That was really difficult. Thankfully, me being a new person, this issue had nothing to do with me. So that was kind of cool. I had to do some cleanup, but that miscommunication had nothing to do with me. So finally, the truck arrived about an hour and a half later. Some people had left, some came back, but we stayed, open later. It was chaotic, I will say, and overwhelming. But honestly, it gave me a real crash course in adaptability in this role and what teamwork looked like in this organization. So, I laugh at the story a lot now. It's a funny story to tell, but it was not funny in that moment, but definitely qualifies as a nonprofit horror story.
Oh yeah. It feels like in nonprofit space, everyone at least once has had some type of connection to a food distribution organization. I felt that in my heart. Cause you said wintertime, which it's not Maine, in the middle of winter, but it still gets chilly for a lot of people if you're not, have the right, resources to make it through a safe winter. So it's 6 a.m, you said?
Yes, about 6, 7 o'clock in the morning, around that time.
200 cars?
About 200 cars. Yeah, it was definitely one of our larger sites. And it was definitely unheard of. That issue never happened again. But just for that to be my first day of work was wild. And if you think about that line of work, there are multiple departments and teams that you need to go through to get that produced. So I learned a lot. I mean, forget an SOP. I got to see it live in action.
That's a top five horror story we've ever had on this show.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Cause that is, I mean, I can just like you said, you weren't the person in charge, but I know the energy that was felt there was tense. It was probably thick, okay, where's this truck? What's going to happen? So yeah, I can feel that. Cause that would be horrific to have to turn away 200, family, men, women, children at, elders that might have really, really been relying on that food to be dropped.
Yeah. I mean, we weren't turning anyone away. We were letting people know they could stay in their cars. So a lot of people did stay parked. So no one had to actually leave, but people did wait. I learned a lot about communication in that role as well. But It was an intense couple of hours.
Oh my gosh. One more time. I am joined with Mackenzie Riley. We're wrapping up this episode because when you leave with a nice, like, you know, you go to a nice restaurant and you get that nice taste in your mouth, you're like, I don't need anything else. That's the cherry on top. What a great story. Mackenzie, people may want to reach out to you. Should they message me? Do you want to put information out there? You know, whatever you're comfortable with is what we always like to say here.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for that. I would love to connect with, you know, anyone interested in connecting, you know, sharing any interesting stories. I'm definitely always open to networking and meeting new individuals. I am on LinkedIn. I love me some LinkedIn. My name is Mackenzie Riley. You'll see me. I got a great headshot with hair blowing in the wind. Yep. And you can add.
You also always got some good hairstyles. Side note. You always got some good
Thank
ones.
You. Yeah, I've got little braids today. But yeah, add me on LinkedIn. I'd love to connect with, you know, anyone in the nonprofit industry and, you know, maybe mentor you or help you in whatever way that looks like.
Absolutely. Well, listen, we're going to go ahead and get out of here, everyone. Episode 55. Be sure to listen to previous episodes of the Nonprofit Insider Podcast, where we talk about many aspects of what was talked about on this episode in one way or another. We'll see you on the next one. Take care.
Thank you so much, Swim, for having me.
You know, one of the things, Mackenzie, you said we were talking, you said you like fashion and one of your hobbies is sewing. I thought, well, that's pretty interesting. Like, you know, you're a fashionable person. What is it about fashion? Like, why do you like it?
Yeah, honestly, I've loved fashion since I was a little girl. I used to sketch fashion designs, you know, every night before bed, listening to smooth jazz. During COVID, I started doing inner child work and I kind of thought, hey, let me go back to this goal that I had when I was a little girl and let me bring these designs to life. So over the past few years, I've been, you know, reassessing and kind of reevaluating how I like fashion, and I've learned to sew. I've been teaching myself how to sew, and it's just something I'm really passionate and excited about.